Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper here in our Burlington, Massachusetts offices. My man, A. Sherrod Blakely, is on the line with us. Sherrod's out there in Vegas with the Celtics for the Vegas Summer League. How you doing, Sherrod?
I am doing, and that's about all that's going on right now.
I don't buy it's that, hot. Dude.
Nah, Drapes. Nah. It's like one Drapes. It's like 114 outside, dude.
Dude, all you got to do is go from casino to casino. In Vegas, you don't even have to go outside, big fella. You just go from craps tables to the blackjack tables to the slot machines back to the craps.
I've been
tables.
Dealing with enough crap all week, Drapes. I don't need to actually lose money and deal with crap. Come on.
Sherrod, so much going on with the Boston Celtics, and we're going to get all into it. We're going to talk about Summer League, some impressions from the Utah Summer League. But first, we got to start with the big news today. Avery Bradley being traded to the Detroit Pistons for Marcus Morris. Also going to Detroit, a 2019 second-round pick. Just your initial thoughts on this trade. Personally, I hate to see AB go. I understand it, Sherrod. But Avery Bradley was the longest-tenured Celtics on the roster.
Yeah, and that's why this is really, I think, really hard to stomach for a lot of Celtics fans because of just the long time that he's been here and how we've seen him go from, you know, this 19-year-old kid, you know, from Texas, you know, to being, you know, one of the best two-way players in the NBA. And there's a big part of, I think, Celtics Nation that really, you know, just doesn't like this deal. But when you look at what this deal has opened up for you, I think over time, I think fans will come to appreciate not just what Avery Bradley brought to this team, but also what he's leaving behind as far as opportunities for other guys and really giving the Celtics the ability to move forward with a lot of their young, promising players getting an opportunity to play. And obviously, you know, the elephant in the room when you talk about this deal, the fact that it created enough space to sign, you know, Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why this deal was made. Obviously, we'll talk about Gordon Hayward in a minute, but I think some people would say Avery Bradley gives you something that Jay Crowder doesn't, that even Marcus Smart doesn't. AB, one of the best two-way players in the game. Avery Bradley, you can put on other teams' best offensive guard. He can play whatever guard you want to throw him out on. So to me, Sherrod, it signals – while they made this move to get Gordon Hayward, and I understand they had to make some move to get Gordon, this weakens the team in terms of going for it this year, I think.
I have to disagree with you there, and here's why. With Avery Bradley, and this is no disrespect to him because he is one of my favorite Celtics players, but you're at a point as an organization where you're not going to get any better with him going forward. The potential for him to significantly impact your team going forward, I think if you're not at that peak, you're pretty damn close to it. You bring in a Gordon Hayward who has a very dynamic and diverse offensive skill set. You give opportunities for Jaylen Brown, who I believe is ready to emerge as a key integral rotation type guy, and throw in a guy like Jason Tatum, plus you still got Jay Crowder, you still have Marcus Smart, you have
Hold up, dude. You're buying the Danny Ainge hype, the Danny Ainge notion.
I just gave
here,
you know? Multiple reasons why this makes sense, and you're saying
I'm saying it does make sense, but for this year only, if you're talking about winning the championship, I don't want to hear contending the championship for a championship. What? If you're talking about winning a championship, to me, I want a guy like Avery Bradley on this roster. I understand contract situation. You got to get Gordon Hayward. I understand that. But, man, I wish there was some other way outside of giving up your best on-the-ball defender.
Well, first of all, you weren't going to win a championship with or without Avery Bradley this year. I mean, let's just keep it real. You need to position your roster so that you have the potential to get better going forward. And again, nothing against Avery Bradley. One of my favorite players. I love the fact that every year he comes back with something new to his game that makes him a better player. But I don't believe if you kept Avery Bradley, you were going to win a championship. And if you're not going to win a championship, and he's a guy that you know in your heart of hearts that you're not going to be able to re-sign in a summer of 2018, why would you not move him and get that space that you needed to sign Gordon Hayward, and you get a rotation player better contract?
I agree. I mean, if you're not going to re-sign him, it's just one of those things. You're like, damn, I wish there was some other way. You know what I mean? I wish.
Do, and Danny Ainge, believe me, Danny Ainge wishes there was another way. Because, you know, when you look at his statement after, you know, the trade became official, it's pretty clear and obvious that this was not a deal that he made, you know, without having just a little bit of reservations about. And those reservations didn't have anything to do with, you know, whether he could help them win a championship or not or anything like that. It had everything to do with the fact that this was a quality guy that did things the right way. I mean, how many guys can you talk about that you know in the NBA that every single year they've been in the league, they got better the following year? Mm-hmm. He's one of the few guys. And I think when you have, when you feel that you have no choice but to trade a guy like that, it's going to hurt. And there's a reason why teams were more interested in him than, let's say, A.J. Crowder or Marcus Smart, because you, they know that Avery Bradley is a guy that whatever team you put him on, whatever position you ask him to play, he's going to play it to the best of his ability. And as time goes on, he's going to get somewhat better at that. And, you know, again, for Danny and the Celtics, this was a tough, tough call. But, hey, ultimately – you got your guy that you all that you wanted in Gordon Hayward. You got the, you know, a guy with a great contract. Once again, I mean, Marcus Morris makes $5 million this year, $5.375 the following year. And your team as a whole, you're still at the position you were at the end of last season or potentially better.
Yeah, but and as we continue to talk with H-Rod Blakely, you know, When you get a guy like Marcus Morris, I don't think a lot of people know about him. Some people thought, man, Avery Bradley, you should be able to get a first-round pick. Instead of getting that, Sherrod, you actually get a player, but then you also got to send out a second-round pick. So tell me about Marcus Morris and what he can do.
Oh, listen here. This is the thing about Marcus Morris, and then I've spent a lot of time, you know, in my – between getting on planes, getting here to Vegas, texting people and talking to people on the phone about Marcus Morris. First and foremost, I think people have to understand that him and his twin brothers, or his twin brother, I should say, Markeith, are both disciples of Rasheed Wallace. And before Celtics fans go into an absolute panic, when I talk about being disciples of Rasheed Wallace, I'm talking about they have a very diverse skill set, that they are very tough-minded, grimy. Frankly, they're ass kickers. I mean, that's what they do. And when you look at this Celtics team, and an agent, you know, texted me back this morning, said, finally, the Celtics got a legit tough guy in the front court. And that is what Marcus Morris will bring. He will bring legitimate toughness, not that fake toughness that we sometimes see from guys. Marcus Morris is about that life. And folks out there know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that. This is a tough physical, grimy dude, 6'9", 235. And, you know, he's probably going to get the minutes that Kelly Olynyk got, and he doesn't shoot the ball as well as Kelly, which is true. But here's the thing that people I don't think realize. He's actually a better career three-point shooter than Al Horford. And so you're getting a stretch big who's tough, physical, grimy, something you clearly need in the front court, because right now, let's be real, your toughest guy is 5'9". I mean, if you want to be honest and real about this team, at least now you got another guy in the mix who will give you that toughness. And I think when you get deep into the playoffs, you need that dude. You need a guy who's going to bring that physicality on a night-in, night-out basis. And that's the one thing that I do like about this trade. Because to me, when you get rid of a guy like Avery Bradley, you have to add somebody who's bringing something of value that you don't necessarily have as much of as you need if you're trying to build a championship contending team. His toughness is that element that he brings that I think will really enhance the Celtics squad going forward.
Well, you know, one thing with Marcus and his brother Markeith in the past, when they're unhappy, Sherrod, they've made it known. They don't, you know, keep that to themselves. They don't keep that behind closed doors. How do you see him fitting in with Boston, the city, the franchise? Because let's be honest, you know, the Celtics squad, they shipped out Rajon Rondo. They got rid of Jeff Green. They got rid of Gerald Wallace. They put together a team full of pretty much likable guys. If you say Marcus Morris is about that life, how do you think things will go with him, you know, personally here in Boston?
It's going to be rough waters at first. I feel pretty confident that it's not going to be this smooth transition as long as he stays true to himself, which I think he will. But I think over time, fans will understand and appreciate that this guy is about winning. When you talk about some of the issues that he's had in the past, most of them have stemmed from the fact that he didn't feel as though the commitment to winning around him was at the same level that he was at. And I don't think that's going to be an issue in Boston. I think this Celtics team, to be candid with you, they've been looking for someone who's going to come in and hold, you know, guys accountable and be a little bit more outspoken about that whole process, because it's great to be competitive and compete, but you want to win games. It is really all about winning when you get to this level for these guys, because money, when you're in the NBA and you're in a rotation, you're making good money. So right. It's not like you broke. It's not like you know, you living paycheck to paycheck. You want to be successful. You want to win. You look at the guys who do that, they get the biggest paychecks down the road. Marcus Morris is going to be a guy that is going to be rough around the edges, but at some point, probably sooner rather than later, fans are going to love him. They're going to embrace him because he's bringing a certain toughness that I think this team could definitely use.
Yeah, we talk about being about that life. I know. I see you're all on board about that life. Marcus Smart's about that life.
I feel bad about being all about him, because as much as I love Avery Bradley, I know what this guy brings to the table, and I know this is something that's going to help him. But if I'm, you know, Joe Fan and I don't know this guy from Adam, I would be mad about this trade too. I totally get that.
But this trade does help you get Gordon Hayward, who the Celtics were able to sign, obviously, to a free agent deal. Still waiting for that to become official. Sure, it will here any minute. But just tell me about that move, Sherrod. The Celtics getting their guy, the guy they wanted.
Yes, and for Celtics, you know, this has been a pretty good 2-year run. You know, last year getting Al Horford, which was a big, big addition for them. Now getting Gordon Hayward, another one of the top free agents on the market, arguably the top free agent who was available, because, you know, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, they were free agents only in title only. They were going back to Golden State. Nobody expected them to leave. So they theoretically got the best free agent available. And I think he gives them, again, a dimension that they have lacked. They did not have a guy who could swing between, you know, big guard, small forward, and play some small ball power forward who could impact the game from an offensive standpoint the way Gordon has. And, you know, we don't talk much about his defense because, frankly, around here, he wouldn't fall into the category of being an elite defender, but he's not a horrible defender either. You don't see, you know, he's not Turnstile City when he's guarding guys. He can actually keep guys in front of him and do some decent things from that standpoint. And when you combine him being, you know, I would say a fairly average defender with his diverse skill set on the offensive end of the floor, that is a guy that you can see doing some pretty amazing things for the Celtics going forward, because he can really fit in with whatever role they need him to play at the offensive end of the floor.
Now, he's making the most out of anybody on the team, talking about Gordon Hayward. Is this his team now, Sherrod, or is it still Isaiah Thomas's team and his $6 million or whatever it is IT's making this year?
It's still Isaiah's team, and that ain't going to change as long as he's around. He is still the alpha on this crew, and Al Horford understands that. That's why Al Horford, I think, had a very solid, you know, first season in Boston, because Al knew his role was to defend, rebound, facilitate, and just do whatever is asked of him to win. But he does not have to be the face of the franchise. Gordon Hayward, I think there are going to be many who are going to try to push for him to be the face of the franchise. But what they're going to find out real quick is that IT's not having that. He wants Gordon Hayward. He loves having a guy like Gordon Hayward, because Gordon Hayward can help him and the Celtics. But make no mistake about it, Isaiah Thomas ain't taking no backseat. He may only make $6 million some change, but he's still the straw that stirs this Celtics Kool-Aid. Don't get it twisted. He's still that dude.
No, I'm with you on that. Isaiah Thomas, third team all NBA kind of player. How do you see Gordon fitting in? Is he a two on this team now that Avery Bradley's gone? Do they run him at three and start Morris maybe at the four? And now, how do you see the starting lineup shaking out?
I think Brad Stevens is going to – that, to me, is going to be the ultimate challenge for Brad. I think we may see a situation where Brad's starting lineup really changes from one game to the next. Certain matchups, if you're playing a team with size, then you might go with Morris at that starting four spot. If you're playing a team that likes to go small ball to start, you might see Jay Crowder starting at the four, Gordon at the three, or you might, you know, want to go real crazy and go with your jumbo lineup and put, you know, Gordon at the two, maybe Jay at the three, and Marcus at the four, Al, you know, five, or vice versa. The bottom line is they have a ridiculous amount of options right now that they can turn to. I mean, they can basically play any and every style that their opponent wants to play and be as good or better at it. And that is what the Celtics are about. Now, they want to be a positionless basketball team where you got guys that can just play any and every position so that if they're defensive switches, you don't have a significant mismatch working against you. This is a very good move for the Celtics. And I think what they've done more than anything else is they've solidified themselves as a top four, top five team in the NBA.
Ooh, Sherrod, I'm with you on that. Definitely number two in the Eastern Conference. I still got Golden State and even San Antonio right there with the Celtics.
That's why I say top four, top five, because I mean, you can make a case that they're as good as San Antonio. You can make a case San Antonio's better, but they're in the conversation at least.
Now, what's that first meeting between Gordon Hayward and Jay Crowder going to be like? Do they need to break bread and make peace with each other?
They might need to bring in a peacekeeper or something like that just to make sure that things don't get – nah, listen, I think both of those guys understand that. It's just about Jay being competitive. I don't think it's any ill will or malice or anything like that, but I will say this. I remember that game vividly, and I remember Jay Crowder played one of his best games of the season against the Jazz that night. He was locked in. So I'm curious to see how practices are going to go because I think it's going to be – it's not going to be a bloodbath, but it's going to get ugly. It's going to get messy. It's going to get grimy. So I look at Jaylen Brown. I look at Jay Crowder. Gordon Hayward. Those guys are going to go at each other and because they know how Brad operates. Brad is going to play the guys that produce. That simple. And if you're not getting it done, guess what? Someone's going to take your spot. So I think their practices are going to be extremely competitive. And the guys that we see play are going to be the guys that we know are going to get it done on a regular basis because otherwise Brad wouldn't have them out there.
Yeah, and when you talk about Jay Crowder, there was a lot of talk about a sign-and-trade with him going back to Utah. What do you know about that? How come that didn't get done? And do you foresee Jay being part of this team, especially with that team-friendly contract he has?
I do. Well, first of all, it didn't get done because Boston didn't want to do it. Utah was more than willing to do something because in their minds, we either lose Gordon and get, dust – or we lose him and we get potentially a player like Jay Crowder who could step in and probably start for them this season. And so for them, Utah, listen, when they had those conversations, Utah was all in on that. They were definitely wanting to do that deal to get something in return for him as he left out the door. But the Celtics always felt that they could get that cap space they needed and get a guy that could be in their rotation. And to be honest, the deal that they struck with Detroit was actually a better deal than I thought they would be able to get. Because I thought they were going to have to come up off of a first-round pick in order to get – well, because think about this. They had to clear cap space to sign Gordon Hayward. Everybody in the league knew that.
Yeah, they were desperate.
I was of the mindset that teams were going to say, okay, you can keep your Brooklyn pick, you can keep that other pick, but you're going to give us a first rounder, whether it's yours or another. And the Celtics, I give them a lot of credit. They were able to get this done, get that cap space they needed, and not have to give up a first round pick in the process. And to me, that is why, I'm cool with the deal because I totally thought they were going to have to give up a little bit more because they were not operating from a position of leverage. They had to get something done. Detroit, they didn't have to trade for Avery Bradley. They had KCP.
KCP.
Right, but they figured, hey, but let's see if we can get a guy who's probably as good or better defender, certainly a better, I think, off-the-ball defender, and we can get a second-round pick in the process.
Yeah, but, the thing is, with this deal, to me this signals, and we talked about it earlier, that they didn't feel like they were going to be able to re-sign Avery Bradley. But to me this clears the way for them to re-sign Isaiah Thomas next year, Sherrod.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of how this was playing out. When you start, looking at the tea leaves and read them closely, one of those guys was not going to be back after this season. And they had to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as much as you love what Avery Bradley can do, Isaiah did drop 29 a game last year, did make all NBA and is a two-time All-Star. So, and let's face it, has been on maybe the most team-friendly contract the last two or three years in the NBA, maybe all time. When you look about what he, when you look about his production and how his production and his salary ranks compared to other guys in the league. So I think the Celtics are more than comfortable opening up the Brinks truck a little bit for Isaiah Thomas next summer. And, you know, on a side note, the fact that a guy like Kyle Lowry signed a 3-year deal for about $30 million, don't make no mistake about it. That kind of stuff is going to come into play, which is why I think Isaiah, he's going to get a great deal, but I don't think he's going to get a max deal. Wouldn't be shocked if he gets a similar deal that Lowry got, like a 3-year, $100 million deal, or 3-year, $90, $95 million deal, which is still obviously a lot of money. But if you're Isaiah Thomas, that multiplies your salary times 5.
Right, right. You're getting $30 million a year, bro. You better be happy.
We call that Brinks truck beauty right there, bro. That's Brinks truck beauty.
So things are going to work out for Isaiah Thomas. The Celtics in position here, you mentioned top four, top five team. Are they? Can they beat Cleveland, though? Because that's what I think everybody wants to know. Like I said before, I think they took a step back when they traded Avery Bradley. I mean, to me, if you had Bradley and Gordon Hayward, that's the ideal situation. And so can they beat Cleveland in your eyes?
I think they have an opportunity to. I think they will have an opportunity. I'm not convinced just yet, only because we don't know how their roster is going to shake out. We don't know what Cleveland is going to do or not do between now and the start of the season. And that's why I'm a little hesitant to you know, put them one on one side of that ledger or the other. But, if push came to shove right now, I still would go with Cleveland just because I still think that the been there, done that factor weighs in their favor. But, man, the Celtics have closed the gap. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, because when you look back at that Cleveland series, the one thing that just kind of jumped out at me was there really wasn't that one scoring threat that Cleveland had to worry about other than Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah.
When you were able to minimize his impact, there really wasn't that one guy that could step up that you really had to kind of shift your focus defensively in order to deal with. You know, Avery Bradley, I give him a lot of credit. He tried. He attacked the rim more than he normally does, and he had some success at that, but that wasn't in his wheelhouse. That wasn't the thing. That's not who he is. You add Gordon Hayward to the mix. You got a guy who has shown the ability to get his own shot, can shoot the three, gets to the free throw line, not a ton, but enough to where you got to you have to put a body on him, and just does a lot of little things offensively that I think will make the Celtics a much tougher team to defend. And on those nights when Isaiah Thomas, when teams are trying to load up on him, he can make them pay. And I don't think the Celtics had a guy last season that had that part of their DNA, the ability to make opponents pay for locking in too much on Isaiah.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only thing I want to see, you know, playing in Utah, Sherrod, and making it into the first round and the second round is a lot different than standing toe-to-toe, eye-to-eye with LeBron James and Kyrie in Cleveland. Gordon Hayward, he can't be floating through games. He's going to have to bring his A game if the Celtics are going to have a chance to beat Cleveland.
Yeah, and you know, and that's, you know, you look at Al Horford, who had, you know, statistically one of the better seasons, you know, he's had in, as far as impact in the game, and yet you would have thought that he was an absolute bum the way, you know, people were ripping him, you know, throughout the season.
Yeah.
You worry about that for Gordon Hayward a little bit when you think back to he's coming from Butler, which was a mid-major school, you're playing in Utah, which is a small market, you know, and you come to Boston. You know, you just worry, you just hope he doesn't come down with David Price-itis. That's your fear, where he can't hit. Because to me, that's my only concern with Gordon Hayward being a Boston Celtic, is whether or not he can handle the intense pressure and scrutiny that comes about playing for a team here in Boston. We've seen guys like Isaiah Thomas come here and thrive with that kind of pressure. And as I just mentioned, David Price, not so much. So where does Gordon Hayward fall in that whole spectrum? It remains to be seen.
Yeah, I agree with you. So looking forward to the season, you know, it's been such a busy offseason. I'm like, man, I wish the season started tomorrow. I know you need your break, big fella.
Not me.
I'm ready to throw up the ball right now. Let's switch gears, talk about Summer League just a little bit. Utah Summer League wrapped up. Jason Tatum looked good, 2 games. Maybe not as much in that final game. Just your early impressions of him.
Well, Jason, I think is going to be a really good player. The one thing that I always look for in young guys is just their compete level. Just are they playing at a level where you can see, you know, that willingness to just try to fight through some things? Is it there? And with him, it's there's no question. You know, he struggled a little bit when Donovan Mitchell, your boy from Louisville, was on him. But, you know, that was personal. I mean, both of those guys, Louisville, Duke, ACC, there was some familiarity there. And that's one of the things Tatum has got to get used to. Guys are going to come at him, whether it's someone from the ACC or someone, you know, who's just trying to get a 10-day contract. He is going to be a marked man. But I tell you what, he makes the game look easy. I mean, his shot off the dribble, the step back, the fact that he is not shy about trying to, you know, get inside and just get rebounds and doesn't mind getting banged around a little bit. There are far more positives in his game than I thought I would see this early. So I feel really good about his play.
Yeah, and the thing I liked about him, you know, I thought in the first half of that first game, his shot selection wasn't good. I mean, he looked like a rookie, and I know he is a rookie, but I saw improvement from game one, the first half of game one, into game two, and even in the first half of game three. Those step back jumpers he hit in the first half of game three, off the one foot, off the one leg, like Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, you could tell what Danny Ainge and the Celtics liked about this guy. He is an offensive talent.
Yeah, he really is. And the one thing that he also did that I thought was really smart, and I think kind of goes under the radar, is he recognized the matchup he had and what he could do to take advantage of that. When he had guys that were 6'9", 6'10", legit NBA power forward types, he kept them away from the basket, beat them with his dribble, and pulled up for jumpers. When they had a smaller gun, in like 6'4", 6'5", mm-hmm. he went to the post game. And not even – and just the mid-range post game with the step-back jumper. And so that shot is unguardable. He's 6'9", damn near 7-foot wingspan, fading away off 1 foot, and you already like 4 inches shorter than him to jump. You're not blocking that shot. You might as well just go turn your back to him, pick the ball out of the rim, take it out of bounds, because that shot's going in.
Yeah, great, good summer league for him in Utah. Great summer league, I thought, for Jaylen Brown. They held him out of game three, but it was clear to me that Jaylen, his confidence, he felt like he was the best player in Utah.
Yeah, and that confidence, I think, has always been there with him. But one of the things he pointed out to me when I asked him about it, you know, this week, was that, you know, playing with guys like Isaiah and Al and Jay and Avery, you don't get to show your whole skill set. There are things that he can do that he is capable of doing that he just wasn't in position to do because the team didn't need that from him. And I think we're going to see a lot more of what Jaylen Brown is about this season. He's a better ball handler in transition than I think we've saw. I think he attacks the rim angle, not looking to dunk necessarily, but just like finishing at the rim. I think mm-hmm. that's a part of his game that he's going to be better at this year. And just to me, the attitude, he's just got that dog attitude. Like last year, he was just trying to figure things out and still be confident. But now he knows what the league is about. He knows what he can do and what he can't do. And I think that confidence is going to get him a decent amount of time on the floor this season.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the time on the floor. No Avery Bradley. Are we looking at 25 minutes a game for Jaylen Brown, and do you think he's ready for that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking at least 20. And that's, I think, on a low. A lot will just depend on matchups and who has it going and who doesn't. But Jaylen Brown has shown the ability to play multiple positions. I remember when he first got to Boston, you know, the plan was just kind of to keep him at the three. But we've seen him defend point guards, two guards, play small forward, and some small ball power forward. So his versatility, and frankly, he's a lot stronger than he looks, those are all working in his favor. And those are some of the keys to him getting on the floor, and maybe more important in his mind, staying on the floor.
Yeah, and I think if they want to make, you know, if they're talking NBA Finals, Jaylen's going to have to be, his progression is going to have to be a big part of that, no doubt. One guy we're going to see, I think, this season, but has had mixed reviews summer league-wise, Ante Zizic, you've been able to see him up close and personal. Our first time getting a look at him over here in the United States. Are you impressed? A little disappointed? What's your thoughts?
I think he's an NBA rookie. I think he's and he's going to have days where you're going to be like, yeah, I see what they see with that dude. I see it. And other days you're going to be like, what? Who is this dude? his first game, I thought that the thing that jumped out to me, and this is never good, was his conditioning. I just didn't think he was in shape. I mean, they were maybe 90 seconds into the game, and it looked like he was just kind of huffing and puffing his way back on defense. And that, I don't know whether that was just, you know, being so amped up and wired and anxious to be out there that he kind of worked himself up into, you know, a little early fatigue or what. But conditioning is going to have to be, you know, one of those things he's going to have to be much better at. And I thought the last couple games he was better, but I don't think he's in great condition. I think he's not bad. I love his toughness. I love the physicality that he brings to the game. He's a good rebounder. I don't think he's a great one, but I see the tools and the potential for him to be a guy that can help the Celtics. But if he's your starting center, I don't think I think you got problems. I think he's a much better fit at this point coming off your bench, because if you're talking about being, you know, a Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Finals type team, I see him as maybe your first or second big off the bench. I don't see him as a starter, though.
Yeah, and maybe he's a starter in name only, you know, a guy that comes out, plays the first 4 minutes, but really only.
Oh, you're talking about the Amir Johnson role?
Yeah, the Amir Johnson role that we saw in the playoffs in the second half of the season.
I could see that. I could see that. But again, I go back to something I said earlier. I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing the Celtics, you know, really juggle a lot of different starting lineups because of matchups. I think they have that kind of roster where there's only, I think, two or three guys that you can look at and just kind of ink them in as starters.
Yeah.
I think you can make a case almost every matchup where you could, you know, pop out Zizic and maybe throw in, you know, Jaylen Brown or Tatum or something like that.
Is Morris definitely a starter on this team, do you think?
I don't think so, no. I think he's a guy that you can make a case again. Starter, maybe. Coming off the bench,
yeah. Maybe,
yeah. Maybe that too. And the good thing about him is in his career, he has done both. And he's had a decent amount of success at both. But the thing about him and the thing about all these guys, they're going to get opportunities to play. It's just a matter of them making the most of those opportunities to really keep themselves on the floor. Because, listen, Brad Stevens has every reason in the world this year to have a quick hook with everybody. Because you got guys on that bench who will be foaming at the mouth to get in.
You're right about that. And they're
talented enough to where if they get in, they can help. So Brad's got maybe the best problem any NBA coach could ever have. I got too many guys that are good that I got to play.
Yeah. Sherrod, before we get out of here, so many moves the Celtics have made this offseason, whether it's trades, free agency. Is Danny Ainge done this offseason, do you think? Or they still got some room with one of their exceptions to bring in another player, right?
Yeah, and I think they'll do that. I still think they need another big. You know, keep your eyes out for, you know, guys like Andrew Bogut, LaVale McGee, you know, Mo Spate, someone like that who, you know, they're not going to exactly move the needle. But when you look at the way this team is constructed, adding another player like that can only increase, or I should say enhance, their chances of having that deep playoff run that they believe that they should be making on a regular basis now that they got, you know, most of their, you know, their super upper echelon core in place.
Yeah, but, you know, there was that report about Marc Gasol. I mean, the Celtics still have a lot of assets when you talk about their picks. And so where do you see Danny Ainge eventually using those? I can't imagine he's going to actually make all those selections next draft. And so does he dangle them at the trade deadline to try and get, you know, a superstar named player?
Yes. I think that at this point, that's the game plan. Right now, you've got a roster. If you're Danny Ainge, you look at your team and you look at it relative to the East, you're right there with Cleveland. Cleveland might be a little bit better than you, but you are at least a case can be made that you are on their heels at a minimum. And for you, if you're Danny Ainge, that's what you want to be at right now when you consider all the other assets that you have. But you know the type of player that you could add that would put you over the top. And you, frankly, I think you need to bide your time. You need to see how things shake out with your boy Anthony Davis.
I knew you were going to say it. I knew you were going
to
say it.
Because to me, that's the most logical, obvious, you know, put them over the top addition that they can make. And again, obviously, you know, we've talked about this before. Nothing is going to happen until we get close to the trade deadline. And even then, it'll depend on whether the Pacers or the Pelicans are struggling or not. But regardless, that's the type of player, if you're Danny Ainge, you hold out hope for landing. And if you don't, you look at your young core and hope that they continue to develop. Hope that Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or even both of those guys develop into all-star caliber players, which is very possible.
All right, A'Sherrod Blakely joining us from Las Vegas. Go back to those crap tables, big fellas. You know, bet on black and red on roulette. I know, black and red.
I'm a 21 guy, man. I'm a 21 guy.
21, to me too, my friend. Well, enjoy Vegas, man. We'll see you when you get back. And that'll do it for this episode of the Celtics Talk podcast. A very busy offseason continues for the Boston Celtics. Make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, all the podcasting apps. Leave a review also. Check us out on CSNNE.com as well. For A'Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time on the Celtics Talk Podcast. Peace!